Hello, everyone. My name is John Paul. I'm AAA's car doctor here for AAA Northeast. And with me is Daniel Maynard. He is director of automotive at Ad Taxi. First off, Daniel, explain to me what Ad Taxi is.
Sure. Thank you for having me. And Ad Taxi is a digital advertising agency that caters to many industries. I run the automotive division. And so within that, we cover everything from social media advertising to programmatic display and even digital connected TV and digital video buys as well.
Okay. And you guys recently did a survey about kind of coronavirus and automotive. And, you know, coronavirus is certainly affecting everything from restaurants to movie theaters to health clubs to the automotive business. And I know here up in the Northeast, many car dealers were completely closed down from March till May. Some tried to keep their service departments open. Others tried to do a lot of kind of creative things to try to get customers either in the door for service or in the door for even car purchase sometimes. What did your survey tell us?
Sure. So we asked car buyers, people who were in the process of shopping for a vehicle, really what their motivators were. And more importantly, we asked, you know, what was changing pre-pandemic to current status in terms of the price point, what the considerations were, and really what was, you know, the driving factor of which vehicle they thought they were going to end up purchasing.
And I've talked to some people who live in the city, and they don't really want to have to deal with public transportation. They started car shopping. They started used car shopping. Did you find out that a lot of people are looking at used cars as maybe that second or third car in the family now, where, you know, previously maybe they only had one or maybe none at all?
That's exactly right. And specifically, what a lot of the respondents told us is that, you know, they were perhaps considering a new vehicle. And now many more of the respondents are considering used vehicles, whereas previously that they were not. And there were a few factors for that, to be sure. One, of course, was just the shortage of new car supply. Of course, a lot of the factories lowering production and whatnot. The other piece is, you know, folks, if they hadn't been financially impacted adversely because of what's happening, they were really just trying to be cautious in case there was some type of a financial impact to their income. And so really buying, you know, less than they can afford just in preparation for the worst case scenario if we go there.
So some of it really was possible economic uncertainty. What's going to happen with my job? You know, maybe I'm lucky enough to be still employed, but after the first year, things could change dramatically. So that was certainly part of it. Now, a lot of people are brand loyal. Toyota people buy Toyotas, Buick people buy Buicks, Honda people buy Hondas. Subaru is almost a cult here in New England. Is there still brand loyalty right now with everything that's going on?
Yeah, that's a great question. Percentage-wise, it shifted for sure. But really, the bigger, and I personally am I'm a Toyota fan, and you know, I happen to own one. But what folks are really not considering, and this is my opinion here, is that you know, the need of the type of vehicle has dramatically shifted, especially the folks who live in city centers, especially those of us who have to drive quite a bit during a normal work day under normal circumstances.
Yeah.
You know, for example, you know, somebody who may have purchased a Tesla or a vehicle that in a high dense market just to get into the carpool lane or make it easier on the commute or make it cheaper on the commute. Are no longer commuting as much, and for the foreseeable future, that may hold true for a while. So we're starting to see folks really shift their entire purchase consideration set altogether. And so as it relates to brand loyalty, certainly, you know, folks are still loyal to the brand, but the point here is that if Subaru doesn't offer a pickup truck, then in those cases, you know, they may be looking for a larger vehicle where in the past they hadn't considered that because of the driving requirements for their job.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because I know here out on the East Coast, a lot of New York and New Jersey people have maybe had summer cottages in Connecticut or Rhode Island or Cape Cod. All of a sudden, those summer cottages are starting to look like year-round residences, and maybe that small, easy to park city car isn't going to work when you're out quite a ways from home, and instead of driving to the local train station, all of a sudden now it's more trips to the home improvement store.
We're seeing this all over the country. You use the example in the Northeast, certainly in New York City, we're seeing that. San Francisco is another prime example on the other side of the country, where we're seeing a mass exodus from a very expensive city center to the neighboring market of Reno, Tahoe, where you really almost need an all-wheel drive, a four-wheel drive, because you don't have a big parking spot in San Francisco. You don't have a lot of snow in San Francisco, but for all the folks who are going to the country, as you put it, they again have different needs now in terms of no longer being able to rely on public transportation, and having to now deal with snow and other factors that weren't part of their daily lives before. That's exactly right.
Yeah, have you noticed when you were doing your survey, is sticker shock something that's affected people? People that haven't bought a car for a while and are surprised that cars have gone up quite a bit, maybe in the 5 or 6 years that they've purchased a vehicle?
No, we really didn't see any of that in our study per se. And I have to give credit to a lot of the manufacturers. They've been very responsive. We've seen things like General Motors offering, very delayed payments, some safeguards. If you lose your job, then we'll make it easy for you to get the car back, or figure something out to get you through it here. So I think that 0% APR, for example, Toyota is running a 0% APR on a Mirai, a used Mirai that includes a $15,000 fuel card. So incentives like that are really, really helping to soften the burden. As you stated, for folks who maybe weren't in the market at all, especially if they exclusively relied on public transportation, and now they're getting into the market for the first time in a long time.
For those people who haven't shopped in a while, what kind of services have you found dealerships are doing? I know I was talking to a fairly high-end car dealer up in this area, and he said, take the car for a test drive, take it overnight. We'll sanitize the car. What kind of things are you seeing when you did your survey? Similar or different? What did you see?
Absolutely. And it probably won't be a big surprise that I believe the number was about 56 years old and older. We're much more conscious of the safety mechanisms in place, or the new protocols being in place, and just wanted to feel confident that they were going to be safe, whether it was avoiding having to go to the dealership in person and having the car delivered to them, or whether it was, as you mentioned, just some of the sanitation protocols. We've even had many dealerships locally in Southern California, even when there haven't been mandates, being very, very mindful of the number of just total individuals that they're allowing in their dealerships at a time, including personnel, including vendors, just to make sure that there never really feels like there's an overcrowding, which, folks are just, I think, for lack of a better term, a little paranoid about.
Yeah, they are. Are you finding that there's a certain amount of dealer loyalty still, that where you bought a car before, even though it may not be as convenient because maybe you moved or whatever, or you're looking for something different, are people still staying with the people that they know?
That's a great question. I would love to tell you, because I work with a lot of really, really great dealer operators who do a great job with customer service. I would love to tell you that their customers are loyal to them, and certainly there will be a percentage which are. But the truth of the matter is that folks are very, very price-driven in our industry, which makes it a very competitive industry.
Yeah.
But it's also worth noting that some of the dealers have been working, and even the dealer groups and now many of the manufacturers are working on becoming much more online transactional than we have in the past. There's been a big resistance from the car dealerships just because of the way that the sale, the process of the sale usually goes, generally trying to get them into the F&I office at the very end of the deal to try and upsell. There's been a resistance to adopt the e-commerce model, which has been around for ages. eBay quoted a stat years ago that I have etched in my brain, which is that every 5 minutes somebody buys a car online sight unseen, right? So the point there is that there's precedent, there's certainly a comfortability, and there's and we're talking about used cars, by the way, so, you know, lots of other X factors in that. We're finally starting to see more dealerships and OEMs adopt what we're calling online retailing or digital retailing, where they're using companies like Roadster to be able to facilitate a deal and, most importantly, help me get through a lot of the finance and insurance, the F&I elements that generally are kind of the dread of the dealership experience, where I have to go and negotiate and try and find out what my credit is on the spot. And then, you know, now that I can do that from home as a consumer, it is actually helping to make the transaction a lot smoother, a lot faster, and a lot less painful from a consumer standpoint.
Yeah, it seemed as if back in the traditional days, certainly you'd go in, you look at the car, you'd negotiate with the salesperson, they'd have to go check with their manager, which usually meant they walked around the building for a few minutes, came back, and then you kind of agreed on a price, and then you're right, you sat with the F&I person who tried to sell you more stuff that could be rolled into the loan, whatever the case is. Today, or up until today, it seemed like a lot of that was online research, where people were doing the research online, but they would either contact the dealer directly and maybe do some of their negotiation online, or maybe they would just come in fully prepared, knowing what they wanted to pay, knowing what they wanted, but they would come in and do the sale in person. But now we're seeing a totally sort of touchless sales transaction takes place.
Absolutely. And I think the encouraging piece here is, you know, especially for industry folks, is that it doesn't mean that, you know, we give up those profit centers if you're looking at it from a dealership standpoint, because there is value to many of the options that are being presented, whether it be an extended warranty, gap insurance in certain cases, you know, adding things like remote start and all these little things that, you know, many consumers are very interested in. Unfortunately, they're just, by the time they get to that F&I office, they're a little bit exhausted. And believe it or not, studies are starting to show us, this is a different study, by the way, that if you present the information clearly with prices and explain the benefit of each of these things before a consumer gets to the dealership, they're actually, in a lot of cases, much more apt to check those boxes and request those additional add-ons versus, you know, having them be, you know, sprung on them as a surprise once they get into the F&I office when they really haven't had time to consider it or understand it.
Go at closing time. They want to go home too, right?
That's it.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. In one of your surveys, you said that 11% of the people you surveyed said that buying an automobile is no longer a priority. Is that because of the whole work at home culture, or is it financial uncertainty, or is it a combination of all of those things?
I think you really have to just consider how many sales based or customer relation based jobs that are out there now, where, you know, you have so many organizations that are not only, you know, not comfortable yet, both from a liability and a health standpoint of asking their associates to go out in person to contacts as they have in the past. Many organizations are still not comfortable even bringing folks back into offices. Obviously, we have a lot of restrictions, but I use Google as the example, where they proactively made the statement that, you know, all of their offices are going to be, you know, asked to work from home until next summer, 2021. And so, there's just, again, for many folks, you know, who were road warriors, so to speak, in their day jobs, doing, you know, things like calling on dealerships, which is my profession, are now working behind a desk, and they really just don't have a need for a second or a third vehicle.
Now, this is where I'm looking for you to drag out your crystal ball and make a prediction. You know, the world has changed. Certainly, you know, the expression "the new normal" is a little bit overused these days. But, you know, I was talking to somebody who lived in Manhattan. They have moved out of Manhattan for the past few months. Their office is requesting they're coming back, you know, come back in the next 30 days or so. As what we have seen with sort of everything from the whole e-commerce side of it to people buying cars that they haven't seen that just get delivered, whether it's, you know, out of a giant vending machine or whatever the case is, Do you see this is going to be the really transitioning point where car dealers, as much as they're sort of a fabric within a neighborhood or a community or a city, do you see that this is going to be a change, and maybe you know, over the next few years, it's going to be sort of some hybrid mix of, you know, you may buy the car in person, you may not, or do you think at some point it's just going to turn back into what it used to be?
That's a great question, and that's one I've actually spent quite a bit of time considering over my career, and I believe the answer is going to be a slow transition, even with what's happening today. And the reason for that is that, you know, even if you consider, you know, how much money a home costs compared to a vehicle cost, the difference here is that there are a lot of complexities, a lot of technology, a lot of comparisons, you know, to try and manage there. So consumers are still looking for that expert to help guide them, help me understand, you know, what the towing capacity delta between X and Y is. Sure, I can go out and find it myself, but I would much rather pay a consultant to just give me the answers and sell me. We want to be sold on certain products that better fit our needs. So I don't think that the dealership model will ever go away, even though, you know, folks like Tesla have you know, tried to, you know, diverge that, so to speak. They still have to have showrooms. They still have to have, you know, folks who can really guide them through the process. But, you know, what I have seen, and I'm actually quite encouraged about this, are dealerships that are changing their model. I've seen dealerships completely get rid of sales folks and only have non-commissioned product experts who are exactly that. They're experts in whatever the makes that they're selling are. And they can tell me what the difference between, you know, the next model year and my current model year is, you know, in terms of functionality and specs and pricing and all that fun stuff. But what's also really neat to see are the dealerships who are taking it a step further. You mentioned, you know, being kind of part of the fabric of communities. I've seen dealerships offering, you know, free training on how to change your own oil. I've seen dealerships, you know, offer paid car washes, just an excuse to kind of get them there and, mm-hmm. you know, keep visibility to the new products that are out there. I've even heard of dealerships, you know, offering, you know, at-cost driving lessons. And so, you know, being really a resource for everything that is automotive, certainly, you know, accessory add-ons, just, you know, things on how to be safe and put in the car seat correctly. There's an opportunity for sure to for the dealers to maintain their relevancy, but more importantly, to add more value to the consumers that they're looking to serve.
Yeah, you make a really good point about some of the extras that some dealers do. Like you said, make sure a child passenger safety seat's installed correctly. Make sure that, you know, that people understand some of the maintenance. I was asked one time to come out to a local Toyota dealership and be sort of that third party expert when someone kind of has a complaint and says, why didn't Toyota do this? And rather than look at the Toyota representative, they could look at me and say, you know, why don't you think they did it? So it is sort of interesting. And the other part of it is with today's cars, you really are road testing the tech as much as you're road testing the car. And unless you have the product expert that's there, either you're going to not understand the technology that's in the car, or you're going to be at a point where you think the technology is going to overpromise what it can really deliver. So I think, automatic emergency braking, which is going to be standard in a couple of years, is a great technology, but it doesn't mean you can fall asleep at the wheel and the car is going to bring you to a stop. But, you know, you need that product expert that's going to say, in this particular model, it's going to slow the car down, but you still need to make sure that you're, you know, fully bringing the car under control, or you need to be the active participant behind the wheel still.
If you think about a car similar to you think about how you think about your smartphone, you know, most people use their smartphones like they use their brains. They rarely tap into the full capacity of it for, you know, mostly because they really have never read the manual through and through, and they're just unaware of certain features in there. So you're exactly right. I think that there's, again, always going to be a desire for a consumer, especially elderly or maybe newer drivers, to just, you know, give them, you know, a really good, you know, walkthrough and guided tour of the features that, you know, you call out the automatic braking, yeah, that are now standard, that can be really, really helpful in a lot of situations.
Yeah. If you're aware of it. Yeah, and I always joke with people that the best looking part in a junkyard is the owner's manual, because no one ever takes it out to read it. So, yeah, Yeah. Before we let you go, anything else you want to try to bring up about the survey that you did, or we covered most of it?
It really is just speaking to the transition that is not really new. This, a lot of the findings in our study were not, you know, coming out of thin air, save for perhaps the safety precautions, of course. That's a little unique for our situation. But the point is that consumers have been asking for an easier way to purchase a car, a more painless way. And as I mentioned before, you know, a way where they can actually decide and be thoughtful about all the different pieces that really can make your car buying and ownership experience more pleasant. If I have time to really consider what an extended warranty is going to do for me and how it's going to save me from having to go, you know, pay for my own oil changes, you know, 3 years from now. Those are all things that consumers really, really enjoy when it's being put on their terms and they're allowed to do, you know, those considerations in the privacy of their own home, so that they can get to the dealership, meet, you know, an expert, a product expert, and a friend who's willing to just, you know, again, really show them their new toy, which a lot of folks get excited about. I still get excited about every time I purchase a vehicle, instead of, you know, thinking of that experience of, oh my goodness, okay, now I have to spend 6 hours on a Saturday in negotiating with somebody who's going to try and get me to buy a bunch of things I don't really understand. So that's the idea, is that the more that the dealers who are seeing strong success right now are the ones who were already working on these e-commerce-esque buying processes pre-COVID. And those are the folks that are excelling. And the lesson learned here is that it's really put up much more pressure on those who have been resistant to really turning their business into an e-commerce business, just like we're used to buying, you know, things on Amazon and from Apple and anywhere else. It's really, you know, forcing them to adapt and be comfortable with this new business model.
No, I think you're right, and I think as the world changes, we are going to see some differences in the way people both buy and sell vehicles, and we're starting to see it now. And Daniel, I want to thank you for taking some time out of your day and joining us here up in the Northeast.
It was a pleasure. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Take care.